Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's got Star Trek, Episode 76. Voyager, Season 6, Episode 4. Tinker, Tenor, Doctor, Spy.
Tuvok!
Janeway to security. Get a team to the mess hall right away.
Stand back! He's been seized by the Pon Farr. A neurochemical imbalance is driving him to mate. We won't be able to reason with him.
Tuvok, I understand. You are a Vulcan man. You have just gone without for 7 years about. Paris, please find a way to load a hypospray. I will give you the sign. Just aim for his behind. Hormones are raging. Synapses blazing. It's all so bad.
This is the It's Got Star Trek podcast. We're going to get right into it. It's Got Star Trek.
Here it is right now.
Right now. The episode is covering Voyager, Season 6, Episode 4, Tinker, Tenor, Dr. Spy. That's what we're talking about tonight, and we're getting right into it.
So...
we're getting right into it.
Right, getting right into it.
Yeah.
Right. What was the episode called again?
Tinker, Tenor, Dr. Spy.
You know, they could have called it Even Holograms Get Horny.
Yeah.
they could have called it that.
That would be a valid alternative title.
Jesse, what do you think about that?
That would have worked, yes.
Yeah.
Think that would have been a usable title?
Yeah. That seemed to be... he seemed to have a lot of fantasies about...
I was wondering if there was going to be an additional punchline because you were really pushing that. Yeah. It's like, what do you think? What do you think, Jesse? What do you think about that?
I just want to know Jesse's point of view.
All right. We're going to start a lightning round. The lightning round so that we can... So we're getting right into it, right?
What's a lightning round?
The lightning round is this. So you're going to have a very brief amount of time. Each of you take it in turn and answer the questions. The first question of the lightning round is...
Is this a game show?
What did you think of this episode? Dan?
I mean, I thought it was
excellent, Jesse. What did you think?
Wait a second, damn it!
Don't worry, we'll get back. It was a well put together episode, but it was a little silly.
All righty, excellent. Lightning round question number two. What was your favorite moment in the episode? This time, we'll start with Jesse.
Oh man, I like the singing part.
All right, Dan.
I thought, like Jesse, this episode is mostly silly. The Doctor makes it tolerable.
Excellent. Lightning round question number three. And don't worry, you'll get to elaborate that shortly after the lightning round is concluded.
I like when he touched Janeway's butt.
Bonus. That was a bonus answer.
Right here.
Bonus answer. Okay, lightning round question number three. What is your favorite type of lightning? The options are cloud to ground, cloud to air, ground to cloud, intercloud, or ball lightning.
Oh, ball lightning.
Ball lightning, Dan.
I like the kind that goes between your fingertips.
All right, that's a form of static electricity, but we will take it. Last question. What is your favorite type of round thing? Lightning round.
I like a round.
I like a lightning round.
Oh, shit.
I got you.
You did.
Okay, that works. All right, that concludes the lightning round.
I win.
So for all you folks that just want to get in there and get to the meat of the business, that was the meat of the business.
Okay.
All right. Now, we can calm things down a little bit and really think about this show, this episode, this bizarre, silly, entertaining episode, in my view, of Star Trek Voyager. What did you think, Dan?
Boy, that lightning round is a real tease. There was something kind of fun about it, and the Doctor's the only thing that makes it tolerable.
Specifically Robert Picardo, right?
Yeah.
He plays it so brilliantly.
You gotta wonder, like, these fantasies he was having, are these like some writer's fantasies? Why were they all so overtly sexual? I mean, I guess I understand.
This was a very 1990s.
Yeah, episode. And I guess it was kind of like the deal was, it was like, oh, he's so heroic that all the women want him and all the men want to be him or whatever, that kind of deal. And it was you know, him like turning down ladies and being that kind of thing. But why did he touch Janeway's butt? Why did he do that? And I think, and notice her face wasn't in that shot. I bet
Rick,
it was
because Rick Berman was the executive producer at the
time. Yeah, right. I noticed that at the end. I was like, oh yeah, Rick Berman. That's
and
right.
He's got something against Tuvok, I guess, because in most of the fantasies, something happens to Tuvok, or he shows up Tuvok in some way,
belittles him in some fashion.
What I was saying is Janeway's face wasn't in the picture when he touched her butt, so I think it was a stunt butt. I think it was a different butt.
Yeah.
You don't think that was her butt?
Because why did they not show her face?
Yeah. I mean, I honestly hadn't noticed that. I mean, I noticed the touching of the butt thing.
You
I
think
did
they
not
would
notice
use a
the,
butt double?
The framing. I could see that.
And why was 7 of 9 once again naked? She was naked again.
Yeah.
Why was Neelix at the meeting?
Yeah.
That's
why?
A good point. Was it just for that mildly
for that
humorous
mission?
Camera move where the doctor is feeling his leg get felt up by a foot, and then he looks across the table, and at first he's looking at Neelix, and then it shifts over to Seven? Anyway, it's going to take a moment to unpack all this because I do think this is a great episode in a lot of ways. I agree with you, Dan, that I think a lot of that is Robert Picardo and the Doctor help smooth some of these rough edges.
Because he's of course overacting in all these parts, yes. But that's the thing, is that's what you have to apparently do with this presentation of the episode, this script that they had to work with. Like, that's all you really could do. And so he did what he could with that script, I think.
I agree. I think it really rode on him. Mm-hmm. Like for the scene you were talking about, I mean, we'll just jump right in here. The scene you were talking about, where he's painting 7 of 9, an imaginary 7 of 9, in the nude, although the paintings don't have nipples for some reason.
Oh, yeah, that was weird.
I mean, we know the reason, but...
But why would they bother even showing them?
It was odd. Yeah. I think they were going for a Titanic reference?
Yeah, I guess so.
This was after Titanic. Yeah. I mean, it gave that vibe, but... It was clearly another example of the largely unnecessary over-sexualization of the 7 of 9 character. Mm-hmm. And as you noted, it's this prototypical 1990s male, other eras as well, but this male fantasy of like, ooh, look at, you know, everyone wants me. But on the other hand, it partially works here because we know the Doctor... like 7 of 9, right? We know he's into her. So there at least is some sort of emotional connection there. You can't say the same thing about, you know, his interactions with B'Elanna and Janeway, which are just more, ugh.
Well, yeah, B'Elanna was just there so he could have someone to turn down and be, like, better than. And it was funny when he, like, looked, she was like, go take him instead, you know? He wants you. And then I love how Paris just waves his hand like, hey, hey.
Well, awesome. They clearly had fun doing it.
This was an excuse for the crew to act really silly with no repercussions at all. It's like one of those
B'Elanna
what-if
was
episodes.
Being a real bitch to him in the beginning of the episode. Yeah, she was like, you can shut yourself off if you've got nothing else to do.
Oh, yeah, right. Yes, she was.
This is an example in my book of an issue that I think cropped up a fair bit on Voyager, which was somewhat inconsistent characterizations of even the main characters, in that they would often write them in a certain way for a particular episode to suit the story when it didn't necessarily make sense. And I know B'Elanna's prickly, but she was treating the Doctor uncharacteristically shitty.
Right.
I mean,
a little extra.
That was a failure to acknowledge sentience, and it was rude.
Yeah. Monkey scum.
Yeah. It's like, you're wasting energy. You should turn it
yeah,
yourself.
You,
it's like,
you turn yourself off.
It's like, you're wasting energy, motherfucker. You turn yourself off for good.
Mm-hmm. Shouldn't she be like in the brig?
We'll
or
have
something?
More energy without you.
I know. Yeah, of course. So anyway, clearly, she was written to be meaner than she normally would be to set up this motivation for the Doctor to write this
letter. He's a photographer.
Who, the Doctor?
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah, he likes taking holo photography.
Mm-hmm. Holo photography.
Holography.
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 what is the title? What does the title? I mean, what
the title is a play on the John le Carré spy novel, Tinker Tailor, Soldier Spy, which is a fantastic book. There are there's a British TV version that was made and a very good movie version. The movie version condenses.
So that's why it makes sense that the middle two words in this title apply and are relevant, but the first and last word of Tinker and Spy have nothing really to do with anything other than to tie it to the original quote.
Technically,
it's spoofing.
Those potato people were using it. The potato.
Yeah, it's fucking goofy ass people. I love the aliens. I guess we call them. I mean, they're talking to the hierarchy. They keep communicating with the hierarchy. So I don't know if we call them the hierarchy. I can't remember if we learn these aliens' names, the name of their species, or anything. One of them is named Phlox.
Yeah,
apparently,
is
weird because this is pre-Enterprise.
The hierarchy, that was an interesting aspect. That was actually a really interesting aspect of the episode that they didn't really touch on, which I understand why they didn't. It's not what the episode was about.
It was some flavor for that species.
Yeah, it was. At first, I was thinking it was some kind of like committee that's always available to give answers when necessary. But then over time, it was like, wait, this is some kind of like neural network computer program or something that they're like, they're somehow taking this little card and plugging accurate scenario data and putting it in the thing. I don't know how you can properly and objectively convey what you need to convey about the scenario in a little punch card.
Yeah.
When he clicked it, he was the overseer, was like wiggling it back and forth. But and you just plug it in and it just gives this sort of answer based upon, we don't know what, but it seems like a computer program.
Do you think it's because I did not track that? I just thought they were communicating with some central hub or like some central command, and that this was some nightmarish bureaucratic setup with these micromanaging people where they actually make decisions for all of their spaceships as opposed to leaving it to the captain.
So there's a few things. At first I was kind of thinking that, but like one of it is they're always available on the fly to answer with in seconds. Mm-hmm. I mean, speaking of bureaucracy, that would take much longer to answer.
Excellent.
Unless their society has mastered efficient bureaucracy, which that's not the case.
Is your second point the colorful lights?
Yes, it was actually. I swear it was. It's like, why are these all these?
You're right. Okay, it's great. Now it's making sense to me.
Yeah,
you're right.
Why did they have that there?
Cool.
Yeah, and you know, and they're just plugging these cards in. Why didn't they just talk to some person and say, "Hey, dude"? But I guess,
hey, this is the breakdown, man.
Unless there's a bunch of
what should we do?
Unless there's like a million people with stamps, and they get this card and they read the card and hit the, you know, true or false stamp on it. I think it was basically based on the idea of this sort of computer system based that sort of learning over time based on their society and as it evolves and what are the trends at the time, which would explain why at the end there was also the weird point where he was talking how he admired the doctor. Phlox admired the doctor because he thought he was a free thinker. Mm-hmm. And so their society, they don't think freely because it's all based upon the limitations of what a computer has in its array of responses. Even if it's AI learning, machine learning or whatever, it's still going to give you a limited response. And it's ironic that he looks to the doctor for free thought because the doctor, of course, as we know, is a computer program himself. So.
But they're always looking to the computer. So the computer is, still ends up being
the one that helps them out.
Bureaucracy that rules them.
That's right.
Well, they never stop looking at the computer.
The only potential... I buy into your theory, and I appreciate you bringing it to my attention.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go watch this episode again and view it through that lens.
Mm-hmm.
The only possible count against that theory...
This is going to destroy my entire argument. It's going to fall apart right now.
It is not, actually. This opens up a potentially a whole array of excellent Star Trek debates to be had on this podcast, other podcasts, and just the internet at large, which is they do refer to it as the hierarchy, and hierarchy makes you think of levels of whatever,
right.
And it makes you think of some massive thing, like there's some pyramid of power somehow.
Yeah,
totally could apply. So it doesn't undermine your theory in the sense that of course that could apply to some sort of multiple levels of neural fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a Pachinko machine or something where it's like or like Plinko where it's gotta go down and we don't know when we put the chip in.
It's like a mix,
where it's gonna go.
It's like a mix between that and those subreddit simulators.
You just got a bunch of bullion machines.
In the end, it's all
clicking and clacking, and at the end, they're all
true,
like,
false.
A retreat.
True.
Ooh, retreat.
I say true to this false, and he says false to this false, and he says true to the false, therefore it's true, and then we... Like, that kind of deal.
Yeah,
because it's precisely. Like multiple layers deep, right?
Yeah, it's like... five or more.
Do you think that like it moves up to the prime level if it's a big enough deal, like our Supreme Court? Do you think most problems are solved on the
like
first
our
level
Supreme
of
our... Court?
Yeah, the prime level, like our Supreme Court. Like analogous to our Supreme Court.
We are based in the United States of America. Please adjust the phrase as appropriate
Sorry.
For the system
okay,
of government
okay,
in your country.
Well, our...
Could be a Supreme Court. It could be a Supreme Council of Wizards.
Okay, people know we're from what area we're doing this out of, which is...
Not everybody. First-time listeners?
Okay, well, I'm going to assume that most people know that where we're from, and when we say our, we mean our as in the United States.
At least
Supreme
from the
Court.
United States. You think that they suss out from our accents that we are
we've said
United Statesians.
We've several... We've said several times that we are from Washington, D.C.
That we're from
Northern
That we're from Northern Virginia. So people can put it together that Virginia is in the United States. Most people, probably, not every person. Not every person can. But I think it's safe to say when I say our, I'm not saying, hey, people from England, you got to listen to our United States. So, I mean, saying that.
We have a lot
that
of
would be ridiculous. That would
There's
be
lots of people in England.
Hey, Canadians, your Supreme Court? No, we're talking about the U.S. Supreme Court. You adhere to us. I'm not saying that.
The Canadians do have
I'm not saying that. I'm not saying people should adhere to our Supreme Court. I'm just saying we're all
from
the U.S.
because our Supreme Court is
This is why we did the lightning round. Just in the rare event that we get slightly
off. The United States Supreme Court. Or another Supreme Court. The Supreme Court. Oh, well, that's being very earthist of you, saying the Supreme Court. They call it the hierarchy, but you call it the Supreme Court. Anyways, I'm just trying to make it relatable.
And it is.
Okay.
I think the hierarchy should be renamed the micromanagers.
So, the micromanagers.
Yeah, it's kind of like micro machines, but, you know, with management.
I wonder what that
is. When you first see those guys and they're all facing their screens and there's, it seems like they're spending a lot of time just showing you the back of their heads. And I was just like, what are their faces going to look like? Is it going to be something like really fucked up and weird? Because like they're spending all this time like there's going to be this big like kind of reveal where they spin around, but then they spin around and then it's just like potato people.
Yeah, with weird small faces.
Funny nose.
Well, I love those costumes. Must have been miserable to wear, but they are great.
When Phlox was looking at the doctor, you know, getting congratulated for whatever kind
and
of
not our Phlox.
Not our Phlox.
His Phlox.
His Phlox. That
nice,
Phlox.
Nice Phlox.
Oh, well, you never answered my question, guys. Do you think that the hierarchy, like some problems go past, like there's all the lowest level of the hierarchy. Is that what you're saying? And some
yes.
problems. Okay.
I mean, I do. I do. It makes sense to me.
Yeah.
It makes if there's a hierarchy, even if it's a computer hierarchy.
I just felt like with
it's like computer.
We did. We kind of lost focus on that subject and moved on. Maybe that was the best idea.
Yes,
okay.
Yes,
anyways.
Yes, we did.
Anyways. Yes. So they were looking when the doctor got all the metal. Phlox was looking through, and he was like studying the doctor. Why wasn't it a POV shot from the doctor? Like, what camera was floating? Because he was looking at the screen, watching the doctor's fantasies.
It's because Star Trek takes place in third person. That's what happens. It happens around 2100, I think.
Yeah, everything is third person.
Yeah, there's just a dimensional shift, and everyone turns into third person.
So it's like
people.
A video game instead of like playing GoldenEye from like first person.
Yeah, you watch yourself. You're third person. Yeah,
like
Spock
Witcher.
Spock can always dial up the episode as it's happening and
exactly.
look at it.
Yeah. Right. That's right. So
other shows have done that.
So you just kind of like so they can reuse footage, I guess. Right. Just anyway.
Well,
so they were potato people. The overseer was played by Googie Gress.
Googie Gress?
That's the name of the actor, Googie Gress.
Googie, yeah. Googie, Googie.
Was this actor in any other television programs of interest? Or perhaps movies? Possibly Broadway plays?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, Patrick.
I don't mean to put you on the spot. While Dan is looking up that information...
He was in Sex, Death, and Bowling, according to me, not IMDb. Sex,
according
death,
to me, not IMDb.
I think Dan is just pretending that he's not looking at IMDb.
Yeah, I'm just pretending, although that would be a movie name, right?
It would be. Well, anyway, so the one thing that's interesting about this episode is it has the whole holodeck thing going on, very similar to what Data did in Phantasms, which we totally did Phantasm. So what episode was that? In episode 34 of It's Got Star Trek, we covered
that long ago.
Phantasm. Yeah, a long time ago. So super freaky to listen to that one. But the idea of taking your sort of imagination, in Data's case, it was dreams, and in the Doctor's case, it's daydreams, imagination, and projecting it onto the holodeck. So we've seen that before. This is a clever tool. And we've already discussed how there's this weirdness and discomfort with, particularly with the Doctor's constant sexualizing, of his fellow crew members. But of course, this is his imagination, right? So it puts us in that weird place. It's not like Barclay on TNG creating holographic replicas of people,
or like Geordi.
Or Geordi.
Oh, man.
Geordi doing so in a slightly more unnerving way than Barclay. And even there, there's a debate. You know, there's a debate about whether or not that's okay or not. But now we're taking it a step back and we're talking about this is the Doctor's imagination and how much control does he have over it. It's just, for me, it's a little difficult to separate that from the meta fact that we know that the producers were like, this will be hilarious.
Yeah.
And we're fucked up pieces of shit and we think this will be funny. But in the context of the show, if you try to divorce yourself from the creepiness factor, to me, it does make sense in the context of the Doctor. We know his insecurities and things like that. And these do appear to be fairly character relevant manifestations of insecurity by fantasizing the whatever the opposite is. He's all the women love him. He's in command. Everyone trusts him and he's better than Tuvok.
Yeah. He made Tuvok he put Tuvok in a medical state of horniness. He made him go through Pon Farr. His singing.
Who's that singing?
His singing put him through Pon Farr.
Which, by the way.
Which is weird, but.
We talked briefly.
I guess it was just a way to make him look foolish, though.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a question because that is such a classic scene. We talked about it in our episode about the most and least funny.
That's true.
The most and least funny things in Star Trek, which we did at some point in the past.
Yeah, that was one of the clips you had.
I think it was like episode 36 or something like that. I could be wrong, but you scroll down, you'll find it's a good episode.
It was right before we started talking about Lower Decks.
Yeah. So we've discussed this scene before, but it's worth going back since we're talking about the episode now. That it's a classic scene. It's incredibly well choreographed. All the actors do great jobs, particularly in this scene, and it really sets the stage for kind of a funny thing. On the other hand, Jesse, I hadn't really considered the fact that you're right. It is also the first instance of Tuvok being sort of emasculated Vulcaninated or whatever you want to talk about from the Doctor's imagination, and there's all this adulation that's going to the Doctor, which just psychologically it's sort of interesting to think about what these fantasies kind of tell you about the Doctor.
I just imagine the Doctor going like, what does people think Tuvok is so logical all the time? I'm a fucking computer program. It's probably why.
I guess that's basically what he was saying.
That
right?
Singing thing is pretty weird.
Yeah.
I mean, he like all sets the scene with that little bit of narration and
he's talking about even the fish cry. Is that from something? Because either way you slice it, whether he's invented or it's from something, it's such a ridiculous idea. I know it's supposed to evoke sort of this hyperbolic feeling of emotion and love. Like, even the fish cry. They're in water. It's ridiculous. But it just came off as kind of silly. Now I'm trying to think of fish crying, and it's really ridiculous. And it's not in a romantic way. That's silly kind of way.
The episode is silly.
Yeah.
They're like when doves cry.
That doesn't make it... I don't count the silliness of the episode as a negative in any means. It's just that this is how the episode is constructed.
Photonic cannon.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
And with the potato people aliens and all that other stuff.
You know what's funny though is like there was one point, because you think of this Phlox guy as kind of like he's like, oh, that fucker, I understand he's going through the plight of whatever, of a worker, but he's still doing some fucked up shit. But at the end of the scene, when he finds out he fucks up and he tells his friend, he's like, I don't know what I'm going to do. Or like, he says, what am I going to do? In that one moment, I felt like, oh man, I feel for you, buddy. I don't know what you're going to do.
Yeah.
I like that one moment, I felt sympathy or even empathy for that character when that was probably the most serious point in that episode is when he was like, when he realized he fucked up, and he's like, and the scene ends with him basically wondering what he's gonna do, and that was just surprising. That It was those scenes with those aliens are really interesting, I thought.
It's an interesting group of guys on that ship.
They had funny
group of
people.
Yeah. When Neelix asked the doctor if he daydreamed, the doctor lied and said he didn't.
Yeah.
Did he give himself? No, that was I don't know, I just blacked out. What happened?
You turned into like some kind of telegraph service or something.
Did the doctor give himself a dishonesty subroutine? Why would he do that? Was he was he tired of getting in trouble for being rudely honest? So he was program himself to lie?
No. Well, first of all, I think the doctor has fibbed before, and when you think about it, a doctor you wouldn't want a doctor to be like Data and have someone like, yeah. Oh, it's very difficult for me to tell a lie, because a doctor might, as part of medical care, might have to be like, it's going to be okay.
Right.
Don't worry.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know,
you
like,
can't be like, you're going
to
die.
There's medical utility to that.
I feel like there's medical utility to daydreaming. Maybe not specifically daydreaming, maybe being inventive and like coming up with like wandering and letting your mind wander.
Unless you're constantly salivating over your female crewmates.
Yeah, right. Exactly, and so maybe that's what they were worried about. Maybe they just didn't have that subroutine down yet, so he had to give it to himself. Now, he was saying one of his complaints was failure to acknowledge sentience. So is the doctor more of an achievement than Data is? Now, he has, because the doctor has emotions. Data is just a nutsack of bolts, basically.
But Laura had emotions, too. Data didn't have emotions on purpose.
Right.
Right?
Was Lore his older brother?
Yeah, Lore was the older brother.
That's true.
Lore creeped the fuck out of all the villagers.
That's
right?
A good point.
All the villagers were like, this motherfucker is some shady asshole.
But Data with his manhood didn't freak out.
Well, so Dr. Sung made a second version that was simpler in terms of the emotion. He even states it's not that Data has zero emotions. Mm-hmm. And this is a debate, of course, but there's the implication is that it's just super basic, right? Basic, what could become something. What happens with the doctor seems to be more about he's just kind of turned on a long time, so like eventually he's got enough juice in his head where he kind of thinks about himself.
He's
more.
Just older than Data.
No, not older than Data. I'm just saying. I think the concept is, and I could be wrong. This may not be explicit, but the idea that the doctor was not necessarily. One argument is the doctor was not necessarily always conscious. Like the EMH thing is not necessarily automatically conscious, but becomes the consciousness emerges out of the length of time the EMH is left on and interacting with people.
Yeah, you'd think Data would have a similar response and be a little more person. You'd think. I was thinking maybe the doctor seems more advanced in terms of having a personality, because Data does have a personality, but Data has a personality like water has flavor. It's there. It's just people like tend to say it's not, But I was thinking maybe the doctor, if it's just a facsimile of another person, right? Isn't that all the doctor is just a copy?
Dr. Zimmerman designed him and programmed him after his own image and a lot
on Picard, where that guy has like those different holograms for different types of crewmen, and like they're all different versions of him.
Yeah, by that time they have a bunch of different ones.
Yeah.
So maybe that's he just appears to me to be more advanced than Data, have more because he's just an imitation. Maybe because he's just an imitation, he's limited by strict programming, whereas maybe Data actually has more of a what's it called when you're capable, more he has more
competence,
he can
rise in the ranks
what's another word for that?
Shooting star.
He's got more potential. Potential is the word I was looking for.
All right.
I don't know. They're different. It's just interesting because they're different. And one seems like, I've got a super personality, blah, blah, blah. And the other one's like, I'm not a robot. I'm an android,
Yeah, I know. Right?
The other's I'm a doctor. Fuck you.
You're a droid and I'm annoyed.
Right. I'm annoyed.
The doctor, of course, has a mildly neurotic, I'm not a psychologist, so I'm not diagnosed.
Data's not neurotic.
But the doctor has some of those tendencies from a pop psychology perspective. Mm-hmm. Anyway. And again, this episode is fundamentally about his the manifestation of his insecurities, mm-hmm. and him trying to prove himself in some way. And I guess I've been trying to think about it. If you boil it down, maybe his core insecurity is wanting to be taken seriously. And you could phrase that in different ways, you know, but wanting to be accepted as a sentient being, as an actual member of the crew, as an entity that deserves the same, you know, politeness and other things. But that all, I guess, comes down to he kind of wants to be taken seriously and not, you know, not be thought of as somebody who can just be turned on and off.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, like Bellana pointed out at the beginning of the episode.
Yeah.
We don't need you. Turn yourself off.
Extra mean, weirdly mean Bellana.
With weird crimped hair. When did her hair become all crimped and not straight?
When she became a bitch.
Oh, shit. Damn. I wonder if that was before or after her crippling depression episode where she went...
You know, I don't remember.
Where she went skydiving from the atmosphere.
Yeah, stealing the old the cut gag from Star Trek Generations when Kirk was going to do that.
Mm.
But then they ended up not doing that and doing a champagne bottle instead.
Remember when Kirk was climbing that mountain and Spock had his fly boots on and Kirk fell off the mountain?
Star Trek V, The Final Frontier.
Yeah.
That's right.
Climbing El Capitan at Yosemite National Forest or whatever they call it at that time in the future.
I wonder if Sam was living there.
Samwise Gamgee?
Yosemite Sam.
Yosemite Samwise.
Yosemite Sam.
Yosemite Samwise.
What if Elmer Fudd was there?
Oh my gosh, then we'd have a real party.
I think he might be more of a California guy.
Elmer Fudd?
I think he's a California guy.
You think Elmer Fudd's a California guy?
Don't you think that's where they're hunting? California. He's hunting in like Northern California? I get the impression that Elmer Fudd is...
Probably.
Like when he's hunting, when it's duck season or wabbit season, he's hunting in Northern California. That's a pure guess.
I could see that.
They got rabbits there. They got mallards.
Yeah, they got all sorts of wildlife up there.
I mean, those are the two you need for the cartoon.
Yeah. How much hunting is allowed up there?
I would imagine some amount.
Yeah. There didn't seem to be many mountains like in West Virginia is all mountains.
No, there's a lot of mountains in Northern California.
Well, yeah, I know there are, but I just think of West Virginia as just one fucking mountain, you know?
But it's not like he's hiking. It's not like Elmer Fudd is hiking. Okay. It's got Elmer Fudd. It's not like he's hiking around.
I know he's hunting wabbits.
I know he's not like hiking up fucking, you know, mountain peaks.
But when you look at the background, I just get a very sort of like level feeling.
All right, well, we'll look into this. If anybody out there knows.
It's been a while since I've seen it, so I'd have to watch it again, and maybe I'm a fucking idiot.
If anybody out there has any input to provide on this whole Elmer Fudd situation, just write us in at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com or hit us up on social media @itsgotstartrek.
You know what they say, Jesse?
Like and subscribe.
They say a doctor who operates on himself has a patak for a patient.
I was going to
say. A patak. I wonder what that could mean.
A patak, that's a common...
It's a bad one.
That's a common Klingon insult. Well,
I mean, apparently, yeah, I mean, but I mean, I think it directly translates to fool, because I think it's in the original quote, something like the doctor who treats himself as a fool for a patient.
They make you play the Moktar.
Yeah. I mean, that's a quote. That's a quote they stole from old American U.S. quotes. So no way. English quotes.
That
I think.
Is true.
It's actually
Dan's
English.
Dan's being very like rah-rah American.
No, I was trying to. I didn't want to say our
Supreme Court.
And you're
our Supreme Court.
You know what the ironic thing is? There is it was. I think it was an English quote. I don't think it's an American quote. It's like an English quote.
Probably.
So I was being very like. Americocentric.
Yeah, but
then.
We say it better here.
Yeah, we say it better.
We say it better with our Mid-Atlantic.
So patak means
Mid-Atlantic
fool.
Accents. Mm. Yeah, I buy that.
I think that's how it goes in English, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They
say patak.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that was cool.
So, yeah. So
it's got Klingon.
Right. So, you know, Phlox somehow made the doctor go crazy using Wi-Fi. Voyager should have used a stronger password.
I thought it was a clever... It was a clever idea that...
They don't have Wi-Fi on...
That Voyager's...
Well, how else did he made him go crazy?
I think it's like Cat 5.
Well, by observing him, he made him go crazy.
He's trying to hack into the Voyager.
Yeah.
Right? Phlox is trying to do that. It doesn't work. I can imagine the scenario where you're tasked with this job by either some nameless hierarchical organization or your onboard supercomputer with the crazy lights. And you're doing this all the time and you're frustrated and bored. And they say, all right, your job is to hack into that ship. Or I think it was even his idea to do it, right? But then when he went around to actually doing it, he's like, oh man, fuck. This is pretty tough. But then he found he could hack into the doctor. So to me, that was a clever mechanism where, okay, you could argue that maybe the doctor's protocols shouldn't be... Why would they be more easily hackable than the rest of the Voyager?
But, because he's an IoT device, and those things generally have less security.
Well, there you go. It was entertaining. And the payoff of Phlox showing up in the doctor's imagination in order to communicate with him, to me, was fun and clever. And we got to see Robert Picardo interact with the potato person, which was fun. So from a sci-fi standpoint, of course there's some holes here or there, but it was a fun, interesting story. In terms of the aliens, and Voyager did a pretty good job of this a lot. They got to meet, since they were traveling as far fast as they could through the Delta Quadrant, they were like encountering crazy new aliens. And at this stage, Star Trek had the budget and the experience and the people that they were making like crazier and crazier aliens, not always successfully. But I think this is an example of pretty like awesome alien design, in not just the actual creatures, but their ship and the culture of the hierarchy stuff.
It was pretty unique, I'd say. Yeah. And Often in Star Trek, it tends to be like everybody starts looking the same, and these guys definitely look different. It's definitely a different look.
And there's even arguments sometimes where you're like, all right, is this alien one of these or one of those? And there's examples of both, and they look very similar, but they're totally different.
So what was their deal? They were hiding in some kind of nebula that they created. Was it like an illusion or something? Or like, because at the beginning, Janeway, I kind of liked this when they were like... I guess it was a doctor or someone, or maybe it was Chakotay, came into the bridge and is like, what's going on? She's like trying to figure out what the fuck this thing is. Mm-hmm. Just like she wasn't all stressed. She was just kind of, huh, what is that? That's weird, man. And like, I thought that was kind of cool. She looked like nice and thoughtful about that. But then I was thinking like, well, yeah, what is that? But they never really explained it. I guess I wasn't clear on if those potato aliens created the illusion of that. Like, why did it suddenly appear? But they never really talked about that. I don't know.
Yeah, they didn't go into all the details, which it was not a big deal because, sometimes Voyager goes into the details a little too much. Yeah. And it's kind of like, we could have gotten all that. We could have gotten what you told us in context clues. So I guess all we needed to know is aliens hiding in a nebula. It looks cool.
Yeah, the only real
ship is all bulbous.
We didn't get much techno babble this episode.
I was thinking that too.
The only thing we got was a butt of a joke, which is photonic cannon. That was a joke. Yeah. That was obviously a joke. So like that doesn't count as techno babble because it's kind of poking fun at it.
It's not even real.
Yeah, photonic cannon.
Carbonite is in Star Wars. That's the other franchise. We're gonna get in trouble. Don't cross the streams. That's yet another franchise.
Oh, Chewie.
I like how Paris referred to whoopee cushions as technology.
Harry Kim doesn't know what a whoopee cushion is.
Yeah, he said, Harry Kim didn't know what a whoopee cushion was. Tom Paris was like, it's ancient technology. Yeah. And it's like,
so we're supposed to believe that Harry Kim went through the whole academy and nobody put a fucking whoopee cushion on the seat?
Well, it's too ancient. I guess they have better practical jokes.
He's a nice guy. He doesn't know about all this. Tom Paris is into some shady shit.
That guy sucks.
I like to think of whoopee cushions as technology, though. That's fun.
They are absolutely technology. Especially the self-inflating ones with the foam inside.
Well, now that is serious technology.
It's the evolution of the whoopee cushion.
I bought my bed off Amazon. And it came rolled up, and I unrolled it and just started inflating because I think they just suck all the air out, and then when you unroll it,
it's filled with little nanites.
Oh,
little
it's probably
Borg
got nanites. They're probably studying me.
Oh no.
Yeah. Like it puts.
And they don't like what they see, Dan.
No.
These bites on my arm that I've been complaining about these past couple weeks, they're not bed bites. They're nano bites. Bed bug bites.
You got bed bugs?
I got bed bites.
I was going to say, I don't recall you complaining about bugs. I presume this is for the bit, but it might not be.
My arm is covered in bed bug bites. Because I have bed bugs, and I've been taking off. I don't know if you noticed, but like I've left here from this place with a different shirt than I had when I was coming in. Because what I do is I sleep in that shirt. I come here, then I leave the shirt laying around somewhere hidden.
So the bed bugs come here.
So the bed bugs come here.
Shit.
But they're actually nanobites. So you're getting
nanobots.
Nanobot bites.
They originated here because you put them into your shirt.
Yeah, so they put them in my shirt.
So
now
they just come back.
Yeah. So you got to burn the house down. But nanobot bites. They're nanobot bites.
Nanobot bites.
Nanobot bites. Or would they be nanobot bites?
Honestly, I don't know.
I knew someone who didn't like, would get pissed off when I said Taco Bell, because she was all like, no, the subject of the statement is Bell, so it should be called Taco Bell. And she'd get pissed off. I think she had a borderline personality, though. But that's
again, we are not psychologists. This is a mere supposition on our part.
Did you?
Oh, she was diagnosed. No, she wasn't. We were just assuming. Just for the sake of the bit.
Just for the sake
although I
of
did,
it.
Diet bit. I did know someone who was adamant about Taco Bell instead of Taco Bell. Taco Bell. She was all for Taco Bell and would try to correct me when I said Taco Bell.
Huh. For our international listeners, Taco Bell is a regional, national, global. Is it global?
Well, they have Del Taco out west.
Well, yeah, they have Del Taco. It's a chain restaurant.
Out west, you just get proper tacos.
In Midwest, you know where they get their tacos in fucking Oklahoma? Motherfucking Jack in the Box. That's where they get their tacos from. Jack in the Box.
That's lame.
That's pretty funny, actually.
Yeah, they say, oh, I've had two separate people from Oklahoma, unrelated, tell me that Jack in the Box has good tacos. So,
well, you can write us in at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com.
This would be feedback in this case.
If you are from Oklahoma or have been through there and have gone to get a taco at Jack in the Box.
I bet they feel the same way in Texas and Kansas and Nebula. Nebulon.
I don't know what they do in Kansas, they might. Man.
All right.
Nebuloma.
So back at the ranch,
Alabama,
back
Nebraska.
At the Tinker Tenor Doctor Spy Ranch.
Okay, my bad.
The Spy Ranch.
Guys talk about Alabama.
I think there's a couple
this guy's over here talking about Alabama.
A couple more things to close down the discussion of this episode, and then we've got a couple of letters.
Okay.
To read. Harry Kim is inconsistent in this episode. Not inconsistent. That's not fair to say. He gives the doctor good advice when he makes that point about, well, you know, wasn't the whole deal with your imagination thing so you could expand your limits and stuff and try out different things? Isn't that the point of fantasy, basically? You know, you've practiced this in your mind kind of thing. Let me retract it. I'm not saying it's good advice. I'm just saying it was empathetic advice. He was helping the doctor out at that moment. But then, like, when there's that scene with the doctor painting Seven of Nine naked, mm-hmm. Harry Kim is just standing, like, the scene opens up, Harry's all like, oh, Captain, you better come down and check this out. And the doctor is painting Seven, she's naked, the actual Seven is standing there looking mildly aghast, and Harry Kim is just, like, gawking at naked imaginary mm-hmm. Seven. And I don't know. I didn't like that.
Yeah, I didn't like it.
I don't think Chakotay would have. And I'm not a huge fan of Chakotay. I often find Chakotay somewhat aggravating. But I'd like to think that if Chakotay were in that situation, he would be averting his eyes or something, or kind of being Jesus. That's what was missing. We didn't get somebody kind of being like, ugh. On the other hand, like I said before, it is his imagination. And if you argue he can't control his imagination, I don't know. It's a little unclear whether he can control it or not. I mean, before it starts acting goofy, you know what I mean?
Harry Kim probably had a similar scenario in his brain already, too, where he's painting.
Well, there's that situation. Remember that episode where Harry Kim, I think, again, in episode 36 of the podcast, of the most and least funny things in Star Trek. It's that scene with Seven where she basically says, like, tells Harry Kim that they should copulate.
Oh, right.
Because she thinks, you know, he's all talking about whatever. And he's all like, oh, no. He was nicer in that scene.
I don't know. I didn't notice him looking. So I didn't even remember Harry Kim was in that scene.
It's because he's standing silently next to the actual Seven of Nine, staring at the naked.
I got to check that out, though.
Yeah, I know.
Got to check that scene out again.
The men of the 1990s were particularly childish, as evidenced by this particular episode. But but what are you going to do?
You know that...
call it out and that's it.
You know how I said that thing about the doctor who has himself as a patient, has a talk for a patient or whatever?
Yeah, I vaguely remember something about that.
Yeah, so I said it was like, oh, it wasn't American. It was from England. Well, it was North American, but I think it's actually Canadian. I was looking it up. It was Sir William Osler, who's a Canadian physician. He's
Dr. Osler.
He's credited with that quote. So I just wanted to make it clear that I was doubly ignorant.
See, now, was he a well-off, famous doctor by all accounts? Is that why we know the quote?
He's also known as Dr. Jazz.
He was a Canadian physician and one of the four founding professors of Johns Hopkins Hospital.
Oh, okay.
Wow. So that's
probably, that sounds like something, man.
Sounds like pretty good. He could rub a couple of loonies together. He had some spare loonies in his pocket, if you know what I mean. It means he was rich.
Pocket full of loonies.
But then there's different ones. Like this quote
loonies
says,
"Loonies and toonies."
A physician who treats himself as a fool for a patient. Then it says the doctor who treats himself as a fool for. There's different quotes.
Yeah, so but it comes from the original. I mean, as far as I know, I bet the older quote. I mean, I don't know. Is the more traditional version of this you hear is the lawyer, the person who represents themselves as a fool for.
Do you think that's older than doctors?
What? Yeah, lawyers are older than doctors, dude.
Mm. But do you think that quote is? I guess we could just go. Lawyers are older than doctors. You think so?
Yeah, they had lawyers before they had doctors.
Oh,
if you out there in the audience have access to a computer or some other device that's connected to the internet,
because we don't,
and have access to Google, or just happen to have this knowledge in your head, contact us at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com. The
Set
questions we have
straight.
Are doctors are lawyers older than doctors? What was the first instance of the phrase variation of the lawyer who the person who represents themselves as a fool for a client, or the doctor who does something goofy is stupid? Is that the
basic?
What is Dan thinking right now?
Yeah, that one too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyway, you can contact us.
What am I talking
about? So the summary of this episode is doctor has fantasies. People accept his fantasies as normal and totally not weird. And then the doctor wants to live out those fantasies, at least the non-sex ones. People shut his idea down saying, no, you can't do that. You're dumb.
And there was one where Neelix made him a cake.
And then
he got to blow out the cake, yeah. And Robert Picardo's a fucking acting genius. Like Robert Picardo just sort of like talking to people in the background and then like blowing out that imaginary cake. Cake. I could see a cake.
Yeah, I know.
That's how good his acting was.
So,
I could see the cake.
He was holding it in his hands.
So when people...
Which is not how people normally blow out cakes. I'm sorry, I just felt that was important to know,
yeah,
too.
True.
People don't normally pick up a giant sheet cake and hold it up to their mouth and go... Sorry, Dan. Okay, Dan, please continue.
No, I was just saying that then the doctor basically gets to live out his fantasies and then, like, you know... Everyone cheers and is triumphant. Then he gets a medal of commendation. I don't know what you all are talking about with your cake that was so important, but whatever.
Neelix made a cake with his dirty fingers.
I agree with you, Dan. It's a sweet scene. He does get some measure of fulfillment.
Agree with me for what?
That scene at the end, I mean, I thought the point you were conveying was that the doctor got to live out his fantasy.
Yeah, well, the point it was the whole thing. It was all three. But that was just, recapping the basically what happens in the episode.
To me, I was thinking about how him getting the commendation, the surprise party in the mess hall and all that. I mean, it's predictable. I mean, watching it, you knew exactly what was going to happen, but because of story structure. But, It was a lovely little scene, and it was reasonable, right? Because I know people sometimes have their qualms with the Janeway's decision making. We won't mention Tuvix. There's a whole there's one of the one of the Star Trek Voyager Facebook groups. It's a really good group, except one of their rules is they have all these very pleasant, nice rules about no bullying and everyone's opinion is respected and all the good stuff that you want to see. And then like rule 13 is like no discussions about Tuvix are permitted any longer because it always ruins this fucking group. Mm. Like it just delves into like all the rules go out the window.
What about rule 34?
That's a whole different story.
That's a whole other rule.
Janeway in this case, you could argue that maybe she could have handled her conversation with the doctor differently, but it was not an unreasonable thing to say, look, doctor, we don't have enough time, what are we supposed to do here? This you're asking some ridiculous stuff. You want to be the captain,
yeah,
and you're not giving me any evidence.
You don't need an emergency command hologram. If you need
one, have a command structure.
Then the battle's over.
Right. You just give that. You just give that power to the computer.
One crew member, then that the crew member is in command, and the holograms are doing the work.
Because there is a hierarchy here.
Yeah.
He wants to basically jump ahead of Chakotay, is what he's saying.
Chakotay and Paris and Kim and Tuvok. I mean, all these people that are way ahead of him in line in terms of the command structure. But So it was ridiculous. I mean, and also it's one of those things, if I'm the commanding officer of this person and they say, I want to, you know, be programmed, I want to add to my, an algorithm to my program that lets me do your job. Mm. I'm going to be like, yeah, that kind of makes me think you're not ready to do this job.
Yeah.
So I didn't think her original whatever was problematic, but I also liked that after the events of the episode, I mean, a lot of other people have done stuff without seemingly to get commendations. And, you know, he did an okay job by not getting them killed, but...
He was lucky they were so gullible. I mean, when most captains stand up and go like, arm the photonic cannon! Of course you don't detect it, because it looks secret to you.
That's how we got the Borg. The Borg didn't see it either.
Yeah, and even though the Borg aren't in this area.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, no, like, oh... I'm scared now.
But I did, you know, basically it seeing her make the decision, revise her decision making by saying, you know what? You've demonstrated that maybe there's something there, but we're not going to jump right to that. But we'll start, you know, fiddling around with it, because it's not a terrible idea. It's not as terrible an idea as I initially thought.
We're going to put four people on the electro captain instead of just one note. We're going to put four people on it instead of a note. Before, I was going to make a note about making you an electro captain, but now we're going to put four people on it.
An electro captain.
Yeah.
I like that.
Electro captain.
Any other odds and ends or diddle-daddles or fiddle-faddles?
I thought that this episode, it kind of made a small passing commentary on TV, you know, and how it attempts to satisfy our voyeuristic tendencies. I know that's so fucking cliche and so many things do that, but I felt like when he was watching, there was about like less than a minute spent of him just kind of watching obsessively Robert Picardo, a.k.a. the captain. Flocks watching the captain on the
and getting all screen. Getting all excited about it.
Yeah, and he even says at the end, Flocks tells the doctor he felt like he got to know him over the past couple of days, which, like we do with, you know, various media personalities.
Yeah, we know all that. We know Patrick Stewart. We know Patrick Stewart intimately.
Totally.
Totally.
We know our radio hosts even better, you know, than the TV hosts. But the reality shows, so it's radio. Like, Flocks is essentially watching a reality show and that he thinks it's real, but like reality shows, it's actually just a fabrication based on sort of tiny threads of truth. The truth is that there are these people on Voyager with this technology, but the state of professional and personal relations between the crew is mostly invented, though some of it is rooted in some kind of distant or vague reality. So this is like he's watching reality television. I mean, this was the 90s. This was when reality television was starting to take off. But yeah, I mean,
October
TV
13th, 1999, the air date for this particular episode.
When was the first MTV show, The Real World?
The Real World, early 90s.
Early 90s. So yeah, it was really starting to take off in 99.
Super early 90s.
And then the TV died like 10 years later or something.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, you know, exactly.
Reality television, then TV died.
TV's gone.
There's no such thing anymore. And they don't have game shows anymore. They're all called reality shows.
Well, they have a game show channel.
But
that shows like old game
shows. Yeah, old game shows. But even that common...
Press your luck.
There are game shows nowadays that are new ones, but they just...
That's why I watch British panel shows.
But they classify them under reality television now for some reason.
No, you're better off watching something like Taskmaster or Would I Lie to You or Pointless.
There's still Jeopardy.
Yeah, but
I'll watch Jeopardy if they hire LeVar.
Jeopardy,
Burton.
You know, that's a good point though. Actually, Jeopardy is probably not lumped into the reality television. Yeah. That and Wheel of Fortune.
Wheel of Fortune. Fuck Wheel of Fortune, but Jeopardy at least there's some intellectual component, and I'm not trying to be.
I thought you were playing the trombone for a second. There was a trombone. Yeah.
Any other
can't do that at the end.
Odds and ends.
It's more about
ends. Odds and ends.
That's it. Aww. I got odds.
I did like the line. The computer was funny. It was only a few lines, but when the computer was saying like, warning, warp core breach, closer than you think.
Yeah.
This is your last chance to be a hero, Doctor.
Yeah.
So they still had Major Barrett as the voice.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think that was the only techno babble is when Torres in that exchange was going, try stabilizing the antimatter flow. And I think they're always saying that, so...
Yeah, I hardly even count that.
Yeah.
It's the issue in Star Trek generally, but you know, gold and silver era, whatever, you know, 90s era Star Trek, but particularly in Voyager, was when they would use a lot of techno babble for like a long period of like a minute of techno babble that would somehow like explain the plot of the episode. Or
yeah,
something.
Right.
It didn't always detract from the episode, but over time, when you watch a bunch of Voyager in a row, sometimes you get inured to it. Other times it starts to aggravate.
It's the MacGuffin of in verbal form. It's like, I don't know what, except with the MacGuffin, you can be like, oh, point A went to point B and therefore some stuff happened. This was just like, they just spouted nonsense on me and maybe I'm just too dumb to understand, or maybe it's just like, they're just making shit up. But either way, somehow now the plot's resolved.
Yeah. So this episode was very low on that. And the ones you mentioned are sort of your basic stuff, your basic Star Trek stuff, your basic.
Did you call me? Did you just say I was basic?
I said you're basic.
Basic cable, baby.
That's something people used to say a couple of years ago, as I recall.
Yeah, it was like a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
But people still say dope. Dope is like a thing now.
Yeah.
I mean, people it's been say a thing these for years.
Too. Has Rad come back yet?
Yeah, Rad's around. Rad never really left.
I know it didn't really leave, but you know, in the 80s, it was its heyday.
It's never on A tier or whatever word to say, but it's always kind of hanging in the background.
Come back. Do you think it'll only come back as a term if there's World War III with a bunch of nuclear fallout?
Yeah, I think that's the only case that it would come back. Because
you're talking about Rads. Yeah.
I didn't actually get your joke until I started saying, like, yeah, the actual World War III, yeah, that's the only way. Oh, he's saying rads as in, like, radiation.
Yeah, it's a little nuclear fallout joke.
Yeah, for you gamers out there, it's a little fallout joke. That's a game.
Or in real life, too.
In real life.
Chernobyl.
In Fallout 3, you couldn't go to that one place because the radiation would kill you immediately. It would go tick, 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 tick. It would tick really fast.
Because of the fallout.
Yeah, it was like, you could have a Fallout suit on and be okay everywhere else, except this one place, it was just too much fallout, and you couldn't get there.
It was Fallout 3. That's how much it was.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sorry.
No, that's true.
So
you made a cogent point.
So
odds and ends.
Anything else to say about this episode? Because, you know, during this episode of the podcast, we've had the opportunity to talk in part about the episode and in part about a wide variety of other topics, hopefully of interest to the listeners.
I think we did a lot with that lightning round. I think that
the lightning round is good.
Established most of our material.
Yeah, and get it right out there. So if people need to turn on the podcast, turn it off because they got busy days.
Yeah, you know, who wants to listen to a whole podcast?
Yeah,
or not
you,
this guy.
You can
a
listen
2-hour
to
a podcast.
Even though all the
Star
best
Trek?
Stuff is at the fucking end, the best stuff on our podcast is.
You know what they should have called this episode? Even holograms get horny.
Yeah. I've heard that.
I heard that phrase earlier in this episode. Oh, by the way, here is an odd and end. Apparently, the story was originally conceived to center on Neelix. And it was a different story at that point, but sort of a similar concept. And I think it was supposed to be called something like Neelix's Wacky Day or something. It wasn't that, but it was something kind of silly.
See, I thought it was conceived in the posing scene in the Doctor's fantasies. I thought that's where it was conceived, like a baby, because they had sex.
You mean, okay, what you mean to say, I believe, as I'm interpreting it, is that some writer or producer had that image and said, all right, write the story that makes us be allowed to have this scene in this episode.
I just wanted to turn the word conceived into a sexy word.
Well, you did. Well, you kind of did. I mean, you know, you could argue it's already a sexy word.
Yeah.
You're bringing new life into the
world.
Yeah,
well, you were talking about conceived as in bringing a new, there was originally conceived like as a new episode.
All right, let's get to the totally real listener listener letters.
Because
we gotta wind down the podcast so people can move along home to one of the other fine podcasts that are out there.
No, not move along home.
As everyone's like, everyone turned into just like concerned. It's exactly the 23:47. Time to crinkle, crinkle, crinkle.
What flavor is it?
Dill pickle cashews.
Oh, that's why it's green.
The other one was ramen noodle flavored cashews.
Ridiculous.
Where the hell are you getting this shit from?
7-Eleven.
Oh, man.
7-Eleven is a popular store in many parts of the United States, as well as Japan and Korea.
They have very good snacks, and you should go there.
On the West Coast, they call it In-N-Out Burger, right?
No.
No, they call it 7-Eleven.
No, they call it Ralph's.
Where are you getting this from?
They do have Ralph's, but anyway, that's a whole different thing. Okay, totally real listener letters. The first one, there is no salutation, but the question is fairly straightforward. They knew we post ahead of time what episode we're going to be discussing, and so they knew we were going to be discussing Tinker Tenor, Dr. Spock.
But they only knew that because you've put it on the internet for them to see.
I put it on the internet.
Otherwise,
for them
they wouldn't have known.
And then they were able to, it came across their eyeballs, and they're like, aha.
How does anybody know it?
They submitted a question to feedback@itsgotstartrek.com. You can also use social media @itsgotstartrek. But their question, no salutation, no dear nothing, but they say, does the doctor get hollow boners? Who'd be the better shape agnostic date, the doctor or Odo? Sincerely, Herman T. Bergeron, who's from Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin. Hollow boners. It's a two-part question. Do you think, because this is a valid question
there
for
this.
There
was that episode where he had kids, where he went to that planet in the different...
That's true. They weren't his kids, though.
Oh, they weren't his?
I don't think they were. Wasn't the implication in a blink of an eye that he married some woman, a soprano or something, who already had kids, and he took... I don't know. I think that's what the...
Okay, does the doctor ever change form, shape, ever?
When he gets a hollow boner, he does.
Well, that's why I'm asking, why not? Like, do you program the doctor with a penis, or does he have to add the penis?
I'm basing
algorithm.
This off of any evidence given to us so far, because we can
a
only
penis
go
is definitely something
until
the doctor
it's,
has
until on. It's showed it, that we don't have any evidence to go off of based except for what we've either read in books or watched in the show.
I think there's insufficient on-screen evidence to know for sure.
I think he could give himself
a move to supposition.
I think he could give himself. Well, that's why I asked if he changed form, because I think he could definitely give himself like a horniness subroutine.
Well, and one
he
way
seems
to think
to
it,
have,
he
yes.
he yeah. clearly. Clearly, I mean, to the
he
to
can't
the point
turn
of,
off he can't turn a, off his horniness subroutine.
He's imagining himself being sexually
Nobody
assaulted,
can,
not
can.
Just having sexual relations potentially. You know, that's hinted at, of course, with his female crewmates. But he's also, I mean, dreaming of being having to push women away and be like, no, you gotta go hang out with Paris.
Fight him off.
It's weird,
but you don't need a penis to do that. A penis is not required. You could have a smooth holographic. And you could still have the same lusts. You could have the same romantic feelings towards somebody.
Okay,
those are that. The penis is not necessary for that. Is what I'm
okay.
saying.
Totally. Yeah.
Okay. What kind of sentience needs to program themselves a daydreaming subroutine? And this goes with what we're saying, because on the other hand, if he can program himself with a daydreaming subroutine and still call himself sentient, couldn't he like turn off his horniness subroutine, and so he doesn't have any sort of concern?
So you're saying there is some agency then in on his part. There is some. I've been forgiving him partly because it's his imagination, and you know you have limited control over your imagination.
It just seems inconsistent to me. I think they just don't.
But you're right.
If
he could turn it off, he could. He could turn it off.
I think it's an oversight on like the idea of being sentient, about being able to give yourself daydreams. If you're sentient, how do you not like think about shit? You know, that's the definition of sentience, is basically being able to think about yourself in terms of shit. And daydreaming comes with that. And then why? And then horniness has nothing to do with sentience, but like you. So maybe he has. Maybe. I don't know. It's weird he can call himself sentience, but he can add to his sentience with subroutines.
Well, and he can change his program, and he can change his uniform color.
Maybe he can't change, like, what's it called? The brain stem, like the back of your head, that mm-hmm. shit that's in control of breathing and all that stuff. Maybe that kind of stuff he can't turn off, subroutines, and maybe horniness is back there somewhere.
Maybe Dr. Zimmerman just programmed horniness.
Yeah, and he can't turn it off, which is why he can turn on and off daydreaming. But that still doesn't explain why he can call himself sentience and yet not be able to daydream. I've just talked myself in a circle, so I don't know where I say yes. He can give himself a hollow boner, but as far as Odo, about if he's as proficient and
as Odo
fucks right,
like, or I forget the words they used. I think like there's been a lot more evidence given that Odo would be better at this than the doctor.
I think that guy fucks.
Yeah, I sure is, for real.
He does. I think there's a couple things here in terms of the doctor getting a hollow boner. And I know it's a silly, childish question, but as you can tell, you can develop some serious. It generates some serious debate in the mind. For example, if he can manipulate, we presume he can manipulate the shape of his body, because why not? He can change his uniform and all. No. He can add his little pips. That little silly scene that we saw twice.
Yeah, we had to
deep,
see it.
Deep, and slow adding.
Right.
Why would it not just add all three at once? Why does it have to do it all dramatic?
Because it's like Latinum, they're really complicated. Or
yeah, it's like really ridiculous. He's a hologram. But it, presuming he can change his body, then he could give himself a hollow penis or a hollow whatever he wants, right? Presumably.
A hollow what's it?
A holographic whatever he's interested in. And presumably, that's just a come and go kind of thing. When he's got the uniform action, he doesn't need to have anything tucked away. Right, I don't. You know,
could he make it flow like Odo's penis? Though Odo could be able to flow like the ocean.
He could give himself like flowing blonde hair if he wanted to. Right?
But like with his penis, could he make his penis all liquidy and flowy? Odo can do that.
Yeah,
Odo can do that. To my mind, the doctor. We'll forget about the mechanics of sexual intercourse with the doctor. But if I'm in this position, between the two, and I'm considering it, the doctor's romantic, but he's a little flighty, you know, because he's all about sort of like the drama and the romance. Like, romance is good, but it can actually become a problem in the long term if somebody always wants to do dramatic, crazy, romantic stuff.
They're both of them are childish in their own ways.
Odo, if Odo loves you, he loves you for fucking real.
Yeah, but he's a little naive and like a child.
I agree, but I mean, I'm just saying, if Odo falls in love with you, he, like, old Odo is going to kill a whole fucking planet of people, generations of people, just so another version of him still has a chance to potentially get with Kira. Right? So that dude, he's for real. Right? If he's attaching himself to you, he's serious. Now, there could be some drawbacks to that, but I'm just thinking between the two, I don't know. I think Odo would be a better hugger.
Wait, what?
More enveloping, I would say.
I think
we just went from penises to Odo's true love for Kira to giving good hugs.
I think his hugs would be not only aided by
Patrick's not interested in penises. He's interested in the shape-shifter.
That was a question, though. That was a question.
Well, it's a two-part question.
It's the question, Jesse. The question.
Yeah, the shape. Who would be the better shape agnostic date? And I think Odo, for me. Shape agnostic, I presume, is, you know, they don't.
That's how well you can fit your stuff inside of them.
I take it more generally to mean that your shape is not fixed.
Oh, I thought it meant like how well could you fit your shape inside of someone.
Clearly,
else.
Clearly, I'm understanding that's how you've interpreted it. Perfectly reasonable. I think it was referring more when
really
I take it into the context
now.
Of the doctor and Odo. But anyway.
Because he's always got a flowing, watery penis.
His penis is purely subjective. This is what I keep telling people. All the best stuff is at the end of the episode.
Odo's flowing, watery penis.
Pro tip for new It's Got Star Trek listeners, if you've made it this far. Just fast forward. You just load up the episode. You can just fast forward. All that other stuff is good, too. But just load up a random episode and look, fast forward to the end bit.
We start saying odds and ends.
This is the end bit. This is what we're talking about, the end bit. You talk about watery penises and this, that, and the other thing. And anyway, it's subjective, so it's a good question. Who knows?
We all have opinions, apparently.
We all have opinions about Odo versus the doctor, taking them as a lover.
Was there a second piece of mail?
The doctor's sentience as it relates to his horniness subroutine.
Yeah, I think it's all very interesting stuff.
See, maybe the horniness
continue to be debated.
Maybe horniness is so ingrained in our primal being that it's not a subroutine; it's just the routine.
Yeah,
and everything else is a subroutine of horniness.
I think that's how it is.
It's a somewhat depressing way to think about sex as routine
as the routine.
It's for reproduction.
Hey, honey, it's Thursday night. You ready for the routine?
Yeah.
It's 6 o'clock on Thursday night. The kids are at the neighbor's house.
It's more routine for all the other animals and less routine for us.
Yeah, because we put our frontal cortex inside of our sex organs.
Yeah, get those frontal lobes involved. Odo would get his frontal lobes involved.
But he would not touch Quark's lobes.
Mm. He might. By season 7, he might.
They were on one of those episodes where they were in a ship and they were dying together in the ship, but then they got saved at the end.
It's a whole other series. We'll have to touch on that again in the future. And speaking of whole other series, we have our second letter.
This is real too, right?
This is another totally real listener letter. And this one is from... this one includes a salutation, which, by the way, is not required. It's just, you know, it's nice.
It's,
you
know, polite. Writing. I mean,
not
an
on, maybe not on Twitter
be
or something.
Be an asshole, like, and just demand shit.
Dear
Fuck
It's
you.
Got Star Trek hosts, this week, this person's referring to last week, you discussed the Discovery episode, New Eden. normally when Christopher Pike is mentioned, you objectify him both sexually and romantically, but there wasn't much of that this time. What gives? That's what from gives? Samantha Zebulon, Mitchell Webb Village, South Ribble, Lancashire, England.
Right, Mitchell Webb Village, huh?
Which I believe is in the northwest of England.
Mitchell Webb Village, of course. Yeah, I know Mitchell Webb Village. I know Mitchell Webb Village.
It's in South Ribble, Lancashire.
Yeah, what gives? I don't think I've ever sexualized Christopher Pike. I've just noted, I've noted that he, you know, scientifically speaking, he's a bombshell.
Science is not subjective.
Well, don't they say there's a science of beauty?
My answer was simply that we forgot. Oh. I think we were so wrapped up in other stuff. Because Captain Pike and Anson Mount, who you never see in the same room together, Captain Pike and Anson Mount.
Weird.
I'm just saying, you never see those two guys in the same room together.
What? Wait, what?
Captain Pike
and Anson. You can't say things like that.
Am I fucking you up, man? It's not a big deal. So Captain Pike and Anson Mount are very sexy. Both of those guys are very sexy, and they provoke important challenges to outmoded concepts of static or neatly constrained sexuality.
Yeah.
So how's that, Samantha? What do you think of that?
It was like we didn't really have to say it because we had said it so much, and we were already just talking about him. So,
and he's just a dreamy guy.
We didn't go overboard.
It's like how when I said our Supreme Court, people already knew that we lived in the U.S. So why do I need to redundantly re-specify?
I think it's also, this was not our intention. Like I said, we just forgot. But with Strange New Worlds coming up, I believe in early 2022 is when it's scheduled. They're halfway through filming it as we record this particular episode. We'll have to be in a position where we can regularly discuss Captain Christopher Pike and or Anson Mount without getting too goobly and weak in the knees, because it's unprofessional.
Oh.
It would be tiresome to listen to. In terms of Jesse just chowing down, that's yeah, ridiculous.
That's some fucking crunch right there.
It's okay.
Is that? I'm really sorry.
It's really. It's
comically loud. I'm leaving it in because it is comically loud.
That's hilarious. I thought I was like way off, Mike. Oh my god.
It's like you're eating like a bowl of like Cookie Crisp
podcast
over there.
I was trying to chew it all slowly too.
Hey, it's May something or other.
Strange New World.
What are you going to do? This is the month of May I'm referring to, because this is an evergreen podcast and people are going to be listening to this in all sorts of weird orders.
Evergreen.
What were we talking about, Dan? You mentioned something.
Strange New Worlds.
Yeah.
Anson Mount.
Yeah. So anyway, it's good for us to have practice to not go too weak in the knees about Captain Pike, because we're going to be presumably at some point watching them.
More like Anson Mouth. That's what I say.
Yeah. So you could have made a joke on the mount part of his Anson name, which I think is the more common and low, by the way.
Like,
the low version of the joke is his last name is Mount, and you can come up with various ways. I'm not going to suggest any.
No. You're going to suggest high class. Anus Mount is what you were going to say.
I wasn't going to suggest that.
Yeah, you were.
I might have just retain that in my imagination.
I'm just like
you're taking it out of my imagination, putting it in the holodeck.
I'm revealing you right now about your daydreams and fantasies. You've been exposed, Patrick.
We have been exposed.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, so that's, thank you for those letters. We've been getting lots of great letters lately. Keep sending them on in.
It was weird. Oh, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, keep, you know, feedback at disgusting.com or Twitter, you know.
It made me think about
Star Trek.
Apple Podcast.
When the Doctor was sexualizing Captain Janeway, it felt weird just because it's almost like the writers threw that in there just to be like, okay, well, we got to throw. He'd be leaving her out if he didn't sexually abuse her either.
Yeah, it was every woman major cast member.
And it was only once with Janeway, and he touched her butt. He went all the way. So they were probably just like, okay, he touched her butt.
Well, Janeway was all talking about her you know, Academy injury.
So the thing is that they wanted to do more scenes
So she was sexualizing him too, but she was imaginary.
Yeah, so they wanted to put more scenes of the Doctor sexualizing Seven of Nine, of course, and Baylana, but they didn't feel like doing any more with Janeway. So they were like, well, the one scene we'll put where he's sexually assaulting Janeway is he'll touch her butt. Because that'll bring it over the top, and people will be like, okay, she's been sexually abused enough that we don't need to see it anymore in this episode.
It's the Janeway and Baylana stuff is that
I should stop saying sexually abused, because she asked for it, like you said.
Yeah, I mean, God. Her imaginary version of herself.
I'm going down a weird road. Look,
it's got the 1950s. Yeah. No, it's the Janeway and B'Elanna.
Sexually awkward, I know, is the best I can say.
Janeway and B'Elanna are the things that kind of push it over into the realm of egregiousness.
Yeah.
Because if it's just Seven, and you know, they did go a little far with the whole Seven stuff, but there is a pre-existing understanding. We understand that the Doctor has a certain affection, friendship, and attraction to Seven of Nine from prior episodes, and it's an arc that continues to some degree, right? So there's that makes sense in terms of his imagination. This whole B'Elanna and Janeway like slathering all over, like yeah. fighting, almost getting into a cat fight with yeah. each other, and along with Seven.
I guess Janeway did get in a cat fight about it.
It's out of nowhere.
It was totally a cat.
Yeah, I guess that was a separate scene. Yeah.
Why is he imagining that? There's other things he could have imagined that would have been embarrassing. I was thinking that what would have been embarrassing is if they had a scene where he was like trying to fuck the transporter or something.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's a computer.
Yeah. And to him, that's absolutely normal.
The transporter's got like isolinear rods and rectilinear chips.
Right. But he's still got that human boner.
But it doesn't have to be, because he's a hologram.
You're right. That would be totally normal. That would be a perfect example of something that's totally normal to him, but really weird and out there to us.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you could argue it's more embarrassing to have it revealed that you are sexualizing your crewmates and your commanding officer. Okay, maybe that is more embarrassing. Yeah. And in another avenue, potentially problematic. Although, again, it was his imagination. So argument about whether or not he has the ability to just not even... I mean, he turned it on. So I don't know. It's that whole debate about how much control he has or not compared to... Like, if he was a human, he has no control over it. So if somebody's beaming your imagination out into the real world... It would be unfair, I think, in most cases, to get too mad at somebody for that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Any final things? Otherwise, should we provide the mechanisms for communicating with us in addition to feedback at itsgotstartrek.com and in addition to @itsgotstartrek? What other ways can people get at us? That, you know, of course, Twitter. Instagram, of course, is one of them.
Facebook.
Facebook is another one. YouTube.
No.
YouTube. People dig the YouTube for some reason.
And, you know, they can use their podcast player to find us.
Apple Podcasts.
Yeah, Apple Podcasts. Apple Spotify.
Apple Podcasts.
Oh, it's Spotify.
iTunes.
Stitcher.
Apple, iTunes, Stitcher. iTunes. Apple, yes. Apple Podcast. Right, iTunes,
apologize
iTunes.
To new listeners. This is a theory we're playing around with.
Podcast.
You get more hits for some reason when you start shouting... iTunes, and
iTunes, Apple,
podcasts,
Apple, Apple iTunes, Google Apple podcasts, iTunes.
Though. We this save it for the end, though.
Apple iTunes.
Yeah, so you're at the end. I mean, you don't have to worry too much about it. There's always a fun little bit at the end of the episode, so you can quit now if you want. You can turn it off. You can pause it right now.
It's basically over.
Basically over, but we always put a little. We put a little something extra at the end for you. A little something, a little tidbit.
It's like the tags on the YouTube video tags, how everything on the web on the internet has tags that you don't see. That's what we're doing when we see Apple Podcast, except you can hear them.
We're tagging it.
But you can't see them.
You can't see them.
You can't see them.
Can't see them.
Yeah, so it's still good.
That's one up on YouTube.
We showed them.
Yeah. All right. So we will be discussing some flavor of excellent Star Trek.
Probably an Enterprise.
Business. I think a high probability it'll be Enterprise next week. But keep an eye on our social media or on the website at It's Got or www.itsgotstartrek.com.
Double dumbass on you.
And, we're going to spend the week doing a little LDS. And getting primed for whatever the next episode we discuss. So it should be a Barking Barmy episode. Send in those letters. Follow us on Twitter. Like and subscribe or whatever. Leave reviews. You know all the standard jazz.
What's an LDS?
Buy Bomba socks and you mattress, upside down mattress. What's the fancy mattress, you know, that all the podcasts were always selling? Stamps.com.
K-pop.
Poofy mattress. Razors from Germany. Like they bought the factory from Germany. You know all the podcasts.
Mezen and Miller.
Mezen and Maine.
Mezen and Maine.
Mezen and Maine. Or what were those like? There was like some magic fake silk. You know, some sort of magic.
MeUndies.
MeUndies. Yeah. These are all, these it's are like classic commercials times, you don't hear anymore.
Four times softer than cotton.
Yeah. I don't even know what that means.
God. Yeah. I don't know what that means either.
It scares me a little bit.
That's, yeah. that's just, yeah.
My
yeah.
Pillow. Do they still do My
no,
Pillow?
No, I don't. I never heard a podcast do a My Pillow. And if I did, I might stop listening.
Oh, well.
I think there was a, on there was a radio show that would do My Pillow commercials.
Yes, I believe that. It was probably the radio show of the My Pillow guy.
It was, I think it was that Chad fellow.
I bet that sounds about right.
Okay, we will talk Star Trek at you next week. Have a good one.
Later.
Next week. Next week. We'll talk to you later. Bye
bye. Bye.
Keep still, please.
Anything you say, Doctor.
He does the hands very well.